This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT, HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor.
On call every Saturday afternoon at 5.
This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon and welcome to the second show in season 5 of Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. This week, our topic is the value of family structure in our health and wellness. Today's culture makes cohesion in a family a bit challenging, with busy schedules eliminating time for family dinners, decreased family time in general because of the distractions of social media and time in front of a screen. So when a family's faced with a hardship like a house fire, a natural disaster like a hurricane, or more common challenges like a parent losing a job, divorce, a chronically ill or disabled family member, we ask, what are the tools that provide structure and resilience? Joining us today is Dr. Marina Goldman, clinical assistant professor and faculty in the Addiction Psychiatry Fellowship at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital. She's the immediate past president of the Philadelphia chapter of the Pennsylvania Psychiatric Society, and she's been in clinical practice in psychiatry and addiction psychiatry since 2007. Her previous research at the University of Pennsylvania focused on neuroimaging work examining risk factors in addiction. What a superstar. Thank you for being here today, Marina.
Thank you so much for inviting me to join you. It's a very important topic.
It really is. And I don't know why I think this myself, but we shared a great conversation the other day in deciding our talking points. And as I say, I often think to myself, whether it's myself or one of my children or a loved one, you are what makes you you. Probably every single experience you've ever had until this moment in time, whether you were born left-handed and your siblings are right-handed, whether you're the birth order, are you the oldest, are you the youngest in the family, are you an only child? All those different influences. Did one of your parents die when you were little? Did you live through a family divorce? Did you lose a parent or sibling to suicide? All of those things. Even did you grow up in a house with music? Did you grow up in a house where athletics were emphasized? So let's talk about that as a starter. What makes you, you?
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. So growing up from the very beginning, when you think about very young children, both their brain development, which then would impact their personality development, their cognitive development, it's all impacted by their environmental surroundings. So, and the environmental surroundings, everything you just mentioned, who's present in the home, who's part of the family, all the different aspects of the family structure and the caretakers. But then it also works the other way around, because our brain plasticity and even our ability to shape our personality persists over the lifespan. So we have the ability to change. Our brains are constantly growing and changing regardless of our age. So a caretaker who is nurturing a child is also changed by the experience. So it's really both the change happens in both directions. The child is changed by the caretaker, and the caretaker, of course, is changed by the child. So in that way, when we think of families, it's a very dynamic process, and definitely our personalities are shaped within that process.
Mm-hmm. And you bring up such an important point about, you've heard it said that there is no such thing as true altruism. When you help other people, when you soothe other people, you gain from it too. Not that you're looking to gain when you do that, but you feel better. So in the end, you both benefit. And we talked about heart disease in our show about 2 weeks ago. And I brought up an article I had just read about people who are caregivers. And taking, for instance, we're talking about heart disease in older people, people who are grandparents. Research is looking to show that it's a big boost in their mental and physical well-being. Yes?
Yeah. So the aspect that has to do with altruism and caregiving that touches on the experience of compassion, warmth, compassion, empathy, when we engage in that experience, we have a very positive impact on our brain. The parts of the brain that we associate with good physical and mental health that have to do with specific transmitters in the brain, oxytocin, serotonin, those are all activated when we engage in altruistic, compassionate, warm, empathic experiences. And that's usually what's involved in caretaking.
And I like that you stress too that environment has so much to do. We cited some concrete examples that people can picture, not just children, but adult, a couple living through a divorce. Or let's say that one of the parents is reassigned from military duty. That's time away from the family for a different reason. Blended families. And you as a provider have seen so much. Your focus in helping people is largely addiction cases, but what does that do to a family? I'm sure in every case it's different.
Yeah, no, that's an important aspect of every family, because families are systems, whether they are little or small, whether they're little or big, they are systems, and so all of our systems go through unpredictable stress. And that's just part of, coping in life. Sometimes it can be a little bit more predictable if you're on duty and you have one of these very important helping professions, like being a firefighter or a police officer or serving in the military. You know you're going to be called upon to serve, but you can never control the outcome. You could never really predict what's going to happen. And so all of those pieces kind of add to the general stress. Addiction's a little bit different in that the amount of stress and chaos that can happen within the family unit is much greater, much more intense than what you would experience in sort of what we think of as, even life with someone who takes on these, high-risk service professions. So the impact of that chaos as a stress on the system, on the family system, thinking about what we can do to recognize the process, equip the family members with strategies of managing, reducing the sense of distress when they're experiencing chaos, and ultimately treat the affected individual, and also treat the whole family. And that's how we think about both healing and resilience.
Mm-hmm. And I think the other point that you brought home the other day when we chatted was, of course, environment, but some of it's genetic. You watch a TV show and you'll see sort of a shy little child who at school is a little nervous because the mom and dad might be very chatty and outgoing. And then they feel, or the reverse, you have a child who's more affable and the parents are reserved, and that child sees that the other parents have a bigger say because they're more vocal. I mean, just that's fascinating to me, that personality is there. I watched as our first baby was growing. He was a year old or 2 years old. And he always had his eyebrows furrowed. He was always, I thought the squirrel must be chasing the carrot 24/7 in that little brain. And that's what he grew up to be. He's a very intense thinker. And so some of it's there, no matter what people are exposed to, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So the genetic component, everything you just mentioned and what we just talked about, all aspects to some extent are inherited, even when we think about families where they have a strong tradition of service, whether that service is philanthropy or the service is in the military or firefighters or police officers. So some of that is actually inherited, not just learned, but there's a kind of genetic way that we inherit that type of tendency. We also can inherit illness. And because, as you mentioned earlier, I work with addiction, we know that addiction is also heritable, that the risk factors that have to do with addiction, the reason that tends to be expressed in families is because there's a genetic vulnerability that may be higher in some families than in others. So, and we need to be kind of mindful of that. And that's one way that we work in our system, in our prevention systems, primary care. When we talk to our primary care doctors about our family histories, primary care docs are looking for that to identify, you know, if the family is really carrying not only risk factors for illness like high blood pressure, but other types of illness like addiction and mental health.
How much do you attribute, and again, I'm sure every story is different, how much do you attribute to birth order? I'm the youngest of four sisters, and my behavior as the baby of the family is going to be different than the oldest child who probably is asked to take on responsibilities to help with the younger children or whatever. Some do, some aren't asked, but what do you think of birth order? That has always fascinated me.
Yeah. There is a kind of structural, exactly what you're saying. There's a structural component. So, first child, carries, the first experience for the caretaker. So there's a lot of learning that happens in that first child experience. If you are having a third child family that has three children, by the third child, there's all of that previous experience that puts brought in as well, right? So that's one way of thinking about it. From the point of view of the child, right, being the oldest and how the oldest child then identifies themselves compared to their siblings. And the amount of age difference will have an impact on that as well. So birth order can have lots of different ways that it introduces kind of these structural components and shapes the person's, you know, a personality and identity.
I think so. And being an only child must be a unique situation as well.
Yes, absolutely, because there are lots of ways in which the only child, again, from the point of view of the caretaker, the only child bears the responsibility of fulfilling all of the wishes, of all the hopes that the caretaker has. The only child may also feel that they have a lot more say in the family because there's less, you know, there's less sibling rivalry component involved. So they may feel like they have more access to the caretaker. So those are all aspects that could be part of the unique experience of being an only child.
So fascinating. Let's take a little break. And when we come back, more on the value of family structure.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers.
Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
This is Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Colon cancer, the number two cause of cancer death. Initial screening has been lowered from age 50 to 45 because numbers are rising in younger people. Join the Blue Lights campaign in March. Put a strand of blue lights on your home or business, a blue light on your porch. Send a photo of your lights or of you wearing blue to info@bluelightscampaign.com, info@bluelightscampaign.com. Stop cancer, get screened.
We're back on Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marina Goldman. Marina, we've talked about all the different elements that make a person unique, whether it's birth order, whether they've lived through a divorce or a chronic family member, or I should say a family member with chronic illness or disability. Let's talk about that for a minute, because if there's a family member that has a chronic illness and there's more than one child in that family, the other kids might feel a little slighted, not because of anybody's desire to slight them, but that's just how it is. And they have to learn to cope with that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important aspect that it affects families frequently. So the way that typically unfolds, just from the point of view of a child growing up who is not affected by the illness or the disability, can have kind of two very important effects. One is the effect of the child worrying, right? Because anytime that there's an illness or disability, it introduces what we talked about earlier, a level of uncertainty, unpredictability. And the child who's not affected by the illness or disability directly is affected by their worry. How will this affect my sibling? What will be the outcome? All that uncertainty is still left quite uncertain, because frequently the answers are not concrete. Answers are not available, and outcome cannot be directly controlled by the caretaker, or even in the example of an illness, the doctors. Right? It's all wait and see. You have to wait, give it time, see how things unfold. So there's a child who is then worrying, not in managing this uncertainty. And if the child feels like they don't have as much access to the caretaker as they need to help them manage that uncertainty, then they really kind of have that amplified feeling of being helpless. And that can be very distressing, especially younger in life.
Well, I think, too, I would guess that we're talking about the healthy children now who look at their chronically ill parent or the sibling. Let's say it's another sibling. There has to be 1% of them, that 1% of their being, that feels a bit slighted because mom's taken my brother to the doctor again, or mom can't come to my basketball game because that has to hurt. So I would think that those children then either sink or swim. They either rise to the occasion and become stronger and more independent, or they might grow up feeling a little resentful. Is that a fair guesstimate?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you're describing the other component of it. So aside from the worry and the helplessness that may be part of that experience, is just this sort of typical need for gratification, right? So the experience of having the parent see you grow up, see you succeed, be part of your experiences is gratifying. So not having access to that can absolutely create a sense of either moving forward without, so that more sense of independence, or like you said, sink or swim, right? That's the swim part. The sink part is where the child may develop more frustration, more resentment, and feel kind of stuck with a sense of unfairness.
So the other big component, maybe not so much in today's world, but I think it's still there, is whether you grow up in a home that emphasizes religion, a family that prays together I know in our family, that's an anchor we couldn't live without. But not everybody looks at it that way. I mean, that's where we all get our strength. What about that in families?
Yeah. So we were just talking about the process of accepting uncertainty, managing uncertainty and unpredictability. And when we think of what we derive from religion, among other things, one of the core aspects for us is a sense of connectedness. Because when we think of religion and spirituality more broadly gives us the experience of feeling connected to something or someone or that's broader than us, greater than us. To the extent that families incorporate that feeling, the family is, again, something bigger than just one individual, and our sense of connection to the family. And religion parallels that, or spirituality parallels that. So it can be a very important way for us to manage the distress associated with uncertainty, and helping us accept uncertainty is to feel that we can stay connected to something bigger.
Mm-hmm. And I think in many cases, it helps people say, you know, if it's God's will, he has a plan in mind. And if I just accept it, I'm going to ask him for the tools to get me through this next challenge or heartache. So rules in the home. I love how you explain that, because rules provide structure. I remember years ago, my children are all grown now, but I remember laughing because every year on Christmas Eve, my dear husband tries to get that plaid nightgown over his head and squeeze into it to read the night before Christmas. No matter how old, so as the family has grown, now we have spouses and children, the bed's going to break. This big queen bed and 45 people are now, three dogs and all that. And I thought to myself, I guess tradition provides security that no matter what, Dad is going to read the night before Christmas, even if the bed falls apart or even if the nightgown gets torn trying to get it over his head. Tell us how tradition plays a role, or we should expand it into rules
absolutely.
In the household.
So having rules creates a sense of predictability and consistency. And that's the opposite of what we were just talking about. So the external world is all about unpredictability and uncertainty, because that's just the reality of what happens for us when we walk outside the home. And the home also has a lot of unpredictability in it that can be built in, because, you know, we bring that external unpredictability into the home. We can't avoid it. This is what happens with illness, with job loss, with all kinds of, you know, unpredictable events that are going to impact the family. But if the family has these rules, these traditions, that can, for the family, provide this island, this very important kind of safe space of consistency and predictability that they can always return to, and help them, you know, reconnect with something that can feel more secure.
Mm-hmm. Because I guess, as you say, physically, when you come home, not everybody can provide this, but you do your best to provide that warm place to sleep and food. But emotionally, as a mom, I always tell my children just exactly what you said. I'm your oasis. No matter what happens out there, unconditional, unwavering, mom is here. Come home to me. We'll work through it. And they know that as long as I'm here, that's just understood. So emotionally, you provide that oasis because you want to soothe your children and your husband and your family members. But you talked about empathy before as well, and that's a big factor here.
Yeah,
that rules provide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so when you have this, if rules are used in the way to ensure consistency and predictability, then they provide a sense of, they create a structure that could start to feel safe. Once you establish this basic safety, then the other components that have to do with empathy is really being able, each member in the family structure, being able to take the time to understand the other person's point of view. If a family doesn't have consistency, predictability, rules that facilitate that, then you have a lot of chaos. And chaos does not provide sufficient safety for people to be able to engage in more empathic stance towards each other. People are just very tense and stressed. They can't get to the place of empathy.
So just to give people a more concrete image, what I'm talking about with rules, and you are, is you don't leave the table till everybody's finished dinner. You put your own dishes in the dishwasher. The curfew, your expectations of doing your homework. You don't have to be an A student if you're not meant to be, but I want you to try your hardest. I want you to be honest. Whether it's lights out for little children or curfews, with driving, when driving comes along, you can only have one other friend in the car, whatever it is, there are boundaries, as you say, that this is what mom and dad expect, or this is what my siblings expect. I expect you to share. If you're going to borrow my sweater, then I can borrow your radio or whatever. No, nobody has radios anymore. But so there were two psychiatrists, one from UNC, Dr. Catherine Connor, and Dr. Jonathan Davidson from Duke, that established the Connor-Davidson Resilience Scale. And resilience is really what we're working up to here. Is a family more resilient and more capable of moving through these traumas that we identify because they have the ability to adapt to change, deal with what comes along, cope with stress, not get discouraged in the face of failure? Because what my mother and father used to teach us was step back and say, what's the worst that can happen? Let's work to fix it. And what do you say about that resilience scale?
Yeah, so, you know, we measure stress in different ways, but one piece that is a common criticism, especially within our profession, and not just in psychiatry, but in medicine in general, is we don't often pay enough attention to measuring resilience, right? So stress we know how to measure, but we forget that we should also assess for resilience. So that's one important aspect for us as in the medical field. When we're communicating with our patients, and when you're communicating now with your listeners, it's important to keep in mind that resilience is something that you want to assess within your family. And if you feel like you're not where you want to be, you can build more resilience. It's something that we can build more health. We can build more resilience.
That's a very promising thing to say, because I often wonder, if you do have that resilience, then the family as a unit and individuals will be better able to handle anger or sadness or disappointment. And we have about 30 seconds left. How does a person's self-image play into that ability to adapt? Because am I confident enough in my own instincts? Do I really believe that I'm tenacious and that I know where to find help when the truck's rolling backwards down the hill? Do I know where the brake is? Can I make difficult decisions? And can I accept not having complete control? And again, so what is my anchor? Let's take a little break. And when we come back, you have a lot of questions to answer, Dr. Marina Goldman. And now for your real champion. I call this segment J. Eustace Wolfington, the patriarch who emulates the matriarch, Mother Cabrini. March, Women's History Month. What better way to mark International Women's Day, that was yesterday on March 8th, than to premiere a movie called Cabrini, the story of a woman who wouldn't take no for an answer. Our show today focused on the value of family in our health and wellness. Your real champion is J. Eustace Wolfington, the patriarch of a large family with four generations in the Philadelphia area. He produced a powerful film about Mother Frances Cabrini, who was later named a saint. Maria Francesca Cabrini, born in 1850, youngest of 13 children to farmers in the Lombardy region of Italy. Only four of those children lived beyond adolescence. She was born prematurely and remained in delicate health throughout life, but grew to be a force for the Italian-American immigrants in America, building shelters, hospitals, and schools here. As a child, she attended a school run by the Daughters of the Sacred Heart of Jesus and wanted to join their convent, but they said she was too frail. She became a teacher in an orphanage and founded the Missionary Sisters of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and within 5 years established 7 homes, a free school, and nursery. Always hoping to be a missionary in China, her archbishop told her not to look east, but to the west. Go to America and help the Italian immigrants who were pouring into this country, many in great poverty. She organized education classes for the Italian immigrants and provided support for many orphans. Despite resistance from the mayor of New York, a senator, and church hierarchy, including the Pope, she and her band of 6 sisters fought to enlist the money, time, labor, and support to establish schools, orphanages, and hospitals. And before her death in 1917, she founded 67 missionary institutions to serve the sick and poor, long before our government agencies provided social services. Centers in New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, out west, and countries throughout Europe and South America. In 1946, the Roman Catholic Church bestowed its highest honor and named her a saint. As Catholics, we look to saints as our role models, humble people who dedicate their lives in service to God and his people in need. One of St. Francis Cabrini's biggest fans is this very successful businessman and patriarch, Mr. J. Eustace Wolfington. Eustace is a faith-filled Catholic who made a fortune in the transportation business, but he has his own story to tell. Wolfington Transportation began in 1876 with buggies and carriages. Then their car business took a big hit with the Depression. Eustace himself is one of 10 children and has always understood the meaning of hard work. In 1955, he was headed to work at his father's Chrysler Plymouth dealership when he stopped to visit the St. Francis Cabrini Shrine at St. Donato's Church. He was moved by her story of devotion, but also impressed that Cabrini was an entrepreneur, which was his aspiration. So in 2000, he sold his national car leasing company and named his family investment firm Cabrini Asset Management, Inc. Was it coincidence or providence? Well, in recent years, he's learned that it was Cabrini's nuns who begged for the poor in his own neighborhood as a child. And now he realized the depth of her organizational and leadership skills. In fact, Mother Teresa modeled her own life after Cabrini. In 2011, he was approached by Sister Marie Louise Sullivan, former president of the Cabrini University in Radnor. She asked him to produce a film about this mighty force who paved the way for so many Italian immigrants. He agreed to the plan, but didn't want the story to focus on her life of prayer and teaching. Her entire life was the sermon. Rather, he wanted to highlight the impact of a very strong woman who happened to be a nun. He had already dabbled in the movie business when he supported his nephew, Sean Wolfington, in producing Bella, the family movie with a powerful message about adoption that didn't reach the large audience they had anticipated. But given the opportunity to share the story of his own role model, he answered the call and raised $50 million to make the film. Now, most low-budget films work with $3 to $12 million, but his quest for high quality has produced an extraordinary masterpiece with breathtaking cinematography and impressive performances. You'll recognize top actors including John Lithgow, Frederic Castelluccio from The Sopranos, and you'll be spellbound by the riveting performance of Christiana Dell'Anna, a native Italian who had never acted in America but becomes completely immersed in her character. He enlisted the talent of Alejandro Monteverde and Rob Barr, whose low-budget hit, Sound of Freedom, reached audiences across the country through social media and church networks and grossed $250 million. And the voices of Andrea Bocelli and his daughter will tug on your heartstrings as they deliver the message in the original score, Dare to Be. And did I mention all the profits above the cost of the production will go to charities that support healthcare and missions? J. Eustace Wolfington describes Cabrini as dynamic, giving, and committed to serving. At 91 years of age, he follows in her footsteps and has spent his life giving to others, and says he'll always continue to work, just like Cabrini, who said, when she worked, she'd gain a day, and when she wasn't working, death seemed more real. Eustace devoted 6 years to this project, but says he wasn't the executive producer, Cabrini was. She brought the talent, the money, even the good weather. He quotes a director who says the real impact of a film begins when it ends, when the message stays with you. At a time when the world is filled with anxiety about the future, he wants people to be inspired by the film and knows that their fears will be replaced with the courage to go out into the world and make it better. We salute you, J. Eustace Wolfington, your real champion. Friends, promise me and promise yourselves to go and see Cabrini, just released last evening in multiple theaters near you.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We're learning so much from Dr. Marina Goldman, and we're talking about the value of support and structure in a family on a good day. It's tough in today's culture because we're all so busy and not taking enough time to be together. And it takes real planning to have family dinners, vacation together, work together, play together, I should say. And I've ended the last segment with, how do you think a person's self-image affects dealing with difficult situations? Do I trust my own instincts? Do I have enough confidence in my ability to find help where I need it and be willing to accept that I don't have complete control over a health situation or a natural disaster?
Yeah, that's a very important interaction between resilience, you know, your capacity to feel resilient, which means really to be able to bounce back and adapt after a stressor, and your sense of yourself. If you see yourself as an effective person, if you can trust, believe in your efficacy, we call self-efficacy, then you don't have to feel like you're the expert in everything. You just have to have a sense of yourself that you have the capacity to figure it out. That's definitely an important component of resilience.
Well, you sent me a really terrific article from the Harvard Business Review, and it was called Emotional Intelligence. And what we're talking about in terms of the group dynamics in a family, the individuals and the group as a whole, applies to the workplace too. That's kind of a family because there's a hierarchy of position, but you want positive relationships. So this article goes on to say, there are three elements of behavior that lend to a healthy, good structure, predictability, consistency, and feeling safe. Positive relationships, that you resolve conflict and in an honest and give helpful feedback. Good judgment and expertise. You can't be the boss if your knowledge is not deep and broad. You can't really run the office and expect people to respect you unless you keep up with and respond to problems quickly. And that consistency, that's what keeps us consistent in our conversation. Be a good example. Walk the talk. You know, people say walk the walk. You walk the talk and you follow through and you go above and beyond for your staff as well. Would you say that's applicable and a parallel to family?
Yeah, absolutely. So thinking about, you know, what keeps the family working well is a sense of trust among the family members. And when we think about what are the three components that are required to establish a sense of trust, and this is, I think, what that article hints at or mentions as well, is that you need to have consistency and predictability. People in the family need to be able to know that when you do X, Y will happen, that it's consistent and it's predictable. You definitely need to have a sense that The family as a unit and the different members in the family can use good judgment. That you can you know that when a decision has to be made, the decision is made in a good way, in the right kind of judgment is made, and that there's warmth in those relationships, that there's a sense of warmth because, you know, when someone's in distress, other members are available to provide emotional support, to listen, and to give a validating feedback to help the person recognize that they're not alone with their distress.
So, and I think warmth is the word, because you want to feel like your boss is genuinely concerned about you, that they can't babysit everybody and take on everybody's problems, but at least have that human quality of, I really do care. I will do the best I can to either find help for you or help you myself. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. I agree.
So we talked about what makes each person unique. All those experiences collectively make you who you are at this moment in time. Why structure in the shape of rules is so important. And how do we build those? How do we build that structure and continue it to help it become strengthened? Because resilience after a stressor, whether your housing is disrupted or school is taken away by something like COVID, or your income, somebody loses a job, families hopefully will bounce back to the way things were or bounce forward under new circumstances. And it depends on a lot of things, obviously, the pre-existing stresses, the family's coping skills that we've talked about, resources from extended family in the community, and who's in the family. So what are some of the ways that we can build the supports in a family, those structural behaviors that people need to set up during stressful times?
So thinking about this in a kind of first things first is it's important to spend time together. Right. So for both a sense of warmth to develop and just a sense of predictability and consistency to develop, it's really important to spend time together. And thinking about how that time works. So eating together, working together in terms of chores. You know, people are doing things around the house or within the family to keep the family working together. Playing together, taking vacations and other times when you will have fun together. So just having that time, and that time, if you spend enough time together, that gives you a sense of consistency, structure, and you start to build predictability. And time together is also the first place where you start to really see that there are rules in the family, that the family uses specific rules to help the system, the family system, make decisions about managing risks. There are lots of risks out there. Everything from, you know, thinking about how we use drugs, how we spend our money, you know.
That's a good one.
Who are the important friends that we want to include and stay close with, and who are the people who are, you know, not helpful to the family, right? That these are the people who may be coming in with a more disruptive experience into the family. So thinking about that, making decisions about risks, that a process starts by spending time together, but then the family shapes their way of making important decisions about managing risks. And that, again, influences a sense of consistency, predictability. You know what the rules are in the family. This is how we make decisions. Again, becomes consistent and predictable and creates a sense of safety.
But I love that you also mentioned chores, because for a little child, even if it means carrying the trash can to the front door and then mom or dad will take it out to the side, if it makes them feel like they're contributing, it makes them feel like a big boy or a big girl. If you're asked to help me fold the clothes or whatever, or make set the table, if that's, you know, little Mary's job or little Johnny's job, it makes them feel special. And they learn with time it helps them to be more structured in their own room and keeping it neat and all those good things. And rules about driving and curfew and drinking and all those things. A lot of times kids are like, oh, my mom doesn't let me do anything. But with time, they learn it's a reflection of the mother and father's love. Because we want you to come home in one piece. We don't want you in a car accident. We don't even want you walking around town, you know, under the influence of any of these things, because you're an easier target for somebody to pop you over the head. And they, that's part of, growing up and maturity. What about religion? Because I think the old expression, the family that prays together, I mean, just to say grace together before meals, part of the reason I think family dinners together is because you might be, all in the kitchen, one watching TV, one making dinner, whatever. How was school today? Fine. What happened? Nothing. Who'd you play with? Nobody. But when you sit at the table and they're stirring their mashed potatoes that they usually love, it's right in that face. Remember medical school, they teach us Hippocratic facies? It's right there. Or if somebody's in pain, if they're happy, they're not. And you can't, you don't have time to do that if you're not sitting together, even for 20 minutes to have a quick dinner together, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Religion, again, saying grace at meals would be one example, but going to church, going to synagogue, going to a mosque, those are all opportunities to spend time together. And religion provides moments of quiet reflection, right? This is what it provides as a community. And so in your family community or your broader community, if you don't have enough consistent moments of quiet reflection together, how can you really see what's happening with the other members and, in your family?
That's right. And that's the point in the day, or like you say, in the community at synagogue or church, when we bring up, or at a mosque, when people bring up, who are we worried about in the community? Who are we collectively hoping and praying for? And boy, does that lift you when you're the person getting that support. And when your little guys at the table say, I really hope I pass that spelling test tomorrow, you know what's in the worry department in that little brain. So the influence of the community, we talked about, what if you're in a community that's community-wide issues like poverty and violence? That's really hard. What community supports are out there?
So again, our religious communities tend to be the source of support for areas that are really struggling with poverty and lack of services, lack of public services. This is where our religious institutions tend to come in. A lot of our nonprofits also come in there, not necessarily religious nonprofits, but other types of nonprofits also become sources of community support for underserved communities.
And we have about 30 seconds left. We talk about a family building trust. So those being flexible, those rituals and roles for each family member really strengthen. And sometimes you need to incorporate outside help while preserving your own sense of identity and control and privacy. That can be a tough balance as well.
Yeah, it is. It's always exactly what you said. It's always a balance. It's always a kind of a fluid experience. It's very dynamic. And I wanted to just also mention something that you touched on. All of these rules bring up the very important aspect of taking responsibility. That's also a very important component of resilience, is learning how to take responsibility. So rules, structure gives people an opportunity to really be responsible members.
And helps children become much better citizens. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, our weekly wrap up.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
This is Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Colon cancer, the number two cause of cancer death. Initial screening has been lowered from age 50 to 45 because numbers are rising in younger people. Join the Blue Lights campaign in March. Put a strand of blue lights on your home or business, a blue light on your porch. Send a photo of your lights or of you wearing blue to info@bluelightscampaign.com, info@bluelightscampaign.com. Stop cancer, get screened.
Welcome back to our final segment of Your Radio Doctor. We're here with Dr. Marina Goldman for Your Weekly Prescription. Marina, we've talked so much about the value of family structure and resilience, especially in times of hardship. And one of the things we wanted to add was that when we're speaking to children, we want to make sure that when we share sad or difficult news with them, that it's appropriate, it's developmentally appropriate for them so they can handle it and they're not too frightened, but aware enough that they don't feel like we're holding anything back from them. But I guess the big picture, as you said, the most precious commodity is time, not money, not talent, not time. We can never get it back and we can never predict that we're going to have a tomorrow. And we need to take time to be patient with our family members and let each one express his or her feelings about everyday issues or these bigger challenges.
That's right. Yeah. Thinking about all the different age ranges that can be happening in the family, right? So you can have 4-year-old children and you can have 85-year-old grandparents, all part of the same family. Taking the time together, really make sure you have time together so you don't feel rushed, so you could just sit and listen and exercise that very important skill of being patient, gives you access to really start to understand, creates a sense of warmth, can provide a sense of predictability because people in the family know that you're going to sit and listen together. And absolutely facilitates giving each member of the family the opportunity to express themselves in their age-appropriate way. They're not pushed to do something that's uncomfortable. For parents who are looking for resources, for ways to communicate in age-appropriate ways, difficult types of information, whether it's about illness or addiction, or suicide, there are lots of resources available online that people can use to look at ways to communicate at different ages, that type of
difficulty. Is there one in particular that you'd send people as a first step?
I typically send people to the SAMHSA website. It's the national website for substance abuse and mental illness resources. That's the government side. The other website I tend to send people to is NAMI. That's an organization that works with families who are dealing with mental illness and addiction. But there are wonderful resources that are available online from lots of institutions. Universities put resources online that are quite good. Universities that specialize in a particular area of research, working with families, working with young children. They have large departments that do that. They put together free resources available online.
So I think that what people are hearing is that it's okay to say, this is what I expect of you as children, that these chores make our family and home life more orderly. I mean, you know, we don't say those exact words to children, but this is what mom and dad expect, or this is what I expect of you, my little brother or my big sister. And it just makes perfect sense. And you say it so beautifully that kids need to count on guidelines and structure and traditions to feel more secure.
Yeah. It's what forms for us a kind of anchor and a core that helps us then feel grounded when we're not together as a family. We take that mm-hmm. with us.
And hopefully the best way you can repay your parents is to teach your children those good principles as well. Can never pay your parents back.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Marina Goldman, psychiatrist from Jefferson, most recent president of the Philadelphia Psychiatric Society. And I hope that we have you back 100 more times, because every time we walk away feeling more informed and a little happier.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday at 5 p.m. here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen again to any of our shows on Audacy.com, AUDACY.com. Thanks to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross. And remember to visit Helio.com for the latest in healthcare news and information. March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. Get your blue lights, put a strand on the front of your home or business, or a blue bulb in your porch light. Help remind everyone to get screened for colon cancer, the number two cause of cancer death, but it's preventable. And look to the sky all through Philly. This is year number 10 that we've gotten all major buildings in blue. Please continue to pray for peace in our world, our country, our families, and each of our own hearts. This is your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love. Always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit YourRadioDoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Audacy. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.